Joined by former major leaguer and current MLB agent Jeff Fry, we discuss his playing career, his agent career, and some controversial topics about the game of baseball. I'm Bensy Gisser, and this is World of Baseball. Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode number 40 of World of Baseball. I am here with the former major leaguer and current MLB agent, Mr. Jeff Fry. How are you doing?
I'm doing good, buddy. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, my pleasure. Let's jump right into this podcast. So we're going to be talking about a variety of different things along the lines of Jeff's career, along the lines of his opinions on baseball. And we're going to jump in just talking about his career a little bit. So can you tell me a little bit about your career, where you played, and how it kind of panned out?
Yeah, well, I got drafted as a senior in college in 1988, and in the 30th round, my signing bonus was $2,000, and so I was basically drafted as a, you know, organizational guy, and four and a half years later, I was in the big leagues, and at 25, and played in the big leagues from 1992 to 2001. Played my last year in AAA in 2002, so all told, I played 15 years professional.
Wow. And you're so because you were drafted so late and because your signing bonus was so low, you're a real underdog story when it comes to playing in the majors. Like, were you expected out of the gate to really be in the majors, or were you the only one that thought that you could make it there?
Yeah, I mean, there might have been a couple other people that thought I had a chance, but I'm pretty sure most of the higher-ups in the Texas Rangers organization didn't think that when they drafted me where they did that I would ever play in the big leagues.
Right, and clearly you did, and that is awesome. So really well done to you. That's a huge thing to play in the major leagues. Talk a little bit about where you played. So if I'm not mistaken, you played for Texas, Boston, Toronto, and Colorado across 8 seasons in the bigs, correct?
Yeah, well, actually I had just over 9 years in the big leagues, but yeah, I came up with the Rangers. 92 was there through 95, 96 through 2000. I was with the Red Sox. I got traded at the trading deadline to the Rockies in 2000 for 2 months. And then 2001, I was in Toronto.
Right, absolutely. So I'm going to ask you quickly for a career highlight. What was your favorite moment in your entire career? You can have multiple of them, but let's keep it to like three of your greatest moments.
Well, one for sure was the day I got called up to the big leagues. That was really cool. You know, that's every kid's dream, to get called up to the big leagues.
Absolutely.
I had a walk-off home run in Fenway Park in 1999, I believe it was. Darren Lewis and I went back-to-back. We were losing 4-3 in the ninth inning, and he hit a home run to tie it. I had a home run to win it, walk-off in Fenway. That was really cool. And then my last year in the big leagues, 2001, playing for the Blue Jays, I hit for the cycle. The second Blue Jay in history to hit for the cycle. So it was probably the top three.
And I believe you're the most recent one still to this point, if I'm not mistaken, out of the Toronto Blue Jays.
Actually, Kevin Biggio last year hit for the cycle.
Oh, did he?
So now I'm yesterday's news.
Well, he's a solid young player, so being usurped by him isn't necessarily a bad thing. Yeah, so that's pretty awesome. Those are some really great moments in your career. Talk a little bit about the home run at Fenway Park. Do you remember who was off?
Yeah, Mike Trombley. He was the closer at the time and he was really tough. He was the closer for the Minnesota Twins at the time.
That's got to feel good. That's got to be a huge adrenaline rush. I can only imagine what that's got to feel like.
Yeah, I mean, especially for a guy who's not a power hitter, you know?
Right.
I think I hit like 16 or 17 home runs my entire career, so it's a lot easier for me to remember them than guys who hit home runs in the hundreds.
Right, yeah, so no one, not even you, is expecting that to happen, and obviously that happens, and that's a huge thing. You also hit for that cycle, which is also a crazy moment. Very few players end up doing that. That must have been exhilarating as well.
Yeah, that was cool. That was, it was my last year in the big leagues, and that was a really tough year for me because I had an injury in spring training and I had to have knee surgery, and I only had 4 games to play before I joined the team in the big league, so I wasn't nearly ready to be playing in a big league game. But it's kind of forced because Homer Bush got injured and they didn't have anybody, they had no other options, so they called me up, and just kind of never really got in the groove that year. Always felt like I was not 100%, and to have a day like that, it was pretty cool.
Yeah, the baseball gods smiled on you for that one, no doubt. I believe it was you hit the triple, then the double, then the homer, and then the single?
Yes, yep.
That's pretty awesome. That's also a great moment. So I'm going to shift focus here. Those are obviously your best moments of your career, but how about the toughest parts of your career? Every career has up and down, so can you talk a little bit about the toughest parts of your career?
Yeah, there were a few. I had a game when I was playing for the Rangers. I think it was in like 95, playing against the Yankees in Texas, and I made 3 errors in one game, and the fans booed me. It was pretty bad.
Oh, yeah, that's not fun.
Pretty bad. It was terrible. And then, but I deserved to be booed. I mean, I was terrible.
Right.
And, I made an error when I first went over to the Red Sox in a game. It was a routine ground ball, but kind of a bad hop on me. And I made an error in a game. Roger Clemens was pitching, and the go ahead run scored. And walking off the field, they were screaming at me, telling me to, go back to Texas.
Right, they have tough fans in Boston.
Yeah, they let me have it.
If there's a place you don't want to make an error, it's definitely Boston. Boston and New York, I think.
Yeah, it's like you did it on purpose or something.
Right, definitely. So I believe you were injured for an entire season at the beginning of your career. What was that like, and how did you come back from that?
Yeah, I actually missed 2 whole seasons with knee injuries. After the first one was really tough because when I just made the big leagues in 92, in the off season of that year, I tore my ACL playing basketball.
Oh, wow.
And I was out for the whole year. And that was tough. I kind of had to reestablish myself again in 94. And then with the Red Sox, I was there in 96 and 97, and then signed a big 3-year contract. And spring training, I tore my other ACL. So that was tough. And then during that time, they signed another player to play second base for 4 years. So I kind of had to, at that point in my career, become more of a super utility type player where I played all over the field.
Right. Absolutely. And you had success, and then you came back and you hit for the cycle in 2001, which is obviously a fantastic success story to think about. So I'm going to ask you a question about some guys you faced. Obviously, playing at the big league level, There was serious competition no matter where you went. Who do you think was the toughest pitcher you ever faced in a game?
Randy Johnson was really tough. He, I had pretty good success against him, if you look at the numbers, but I mean, I've never really felt comfortable facing him. It was very intimidating. He's a Hall of Famer. The guy was throwing 100 miles an hour, and he's so tall. And for me, he was probably the most formidable guy. Roger Clemens was tough as well. The guy who I really had a tough time against was Mike Mussina. He just, for whatever reason, he just had my number. I didn't do very well against him at all.
So you did have success against Randy Johnson, though, which is something that a lot of people can't say. He was by far one of the most dangerous pitchers. I actually, in a previous episode of this podcast, I ranked him my number one starter of all time. So that says something about your talents if you have success against a guy like him.
Yeah, I mean, not many guys had success against Randy Johnson.
Yeah,
I mean,
obviously.
He was just a dominant pitcher.
An unbelievable ball player. We're going to shift focus again. We're going to talk about what you do right now. So you shifted out of baseball after the 2002 season, if I'm not mistaken?
Yes, sir.
But you stayed in the game. You are now an agent. Can you talk a little bit about what that job entails?
Yeah, I mean, it covers a wide range of things that we have to do for our players, from negotiating their contracts to endorsement deals, equipment deals, and it's really really cutthroat business. A lot of times when you have a guy up through the minor leagues and you're paying for his gear and all his stuff during his time in the minor leagues, and he gets to the big leagues, and next thing you know, every agent in the industry is called and trying to steal him from you. So it's pretty tough. It's a pretty tough industry.
Right, yeah, it seems like there's a lot of competition for the best guys to be their agent. I don't know if this is confidential or not, but are you allowed to tell me a couple players that you are their current agent?
Now, I don't want to tell you who I represent. Now I can tell you who I have represented in the past.
That would work.
Worked with Ian Kinsler for a long time. Darren Oliver, represented him for 9 years. Mark Lowe, his entire career. Sean Kelly. Ryan Franklin for a little while. I think 20 guys that played in the big leagues. Colt Hines, you probably don't. A lot of these guys didn't really have very long careers, but they still made the big leagues. Joey Butler, Adam Moore, Lucas Lukey. So
I'm aware of a couple of those names.
Yeah.
Yeah, those are all major league players that you got to represent. That is pretty awesome. So nowadays, obviously, with the coronavirus, everything's changed around baseball, and we are excited because of the fact that baseball is back. They finally agreed to a negotiation. They finally agreed to a deal that will have them playing baseball in 2020. Was there any particular challenges about your job during the coronavirus? Is there anything about the coronavirus that made it harder for you to be an agent?
Not really for me. I mean, it's just so much uncertainty, and you don't really know what to tell your players because nobody really knows what's going on. This is something new to all of us. And one of my top guys was having a great spring training. It looked like he was, had a really good chance to make the big league team out of spring training for the first time in his life, and then they get shut down. So that's tough, And now,
right.
I've already got him a job for winter ball. Just, didn't know what was going to happen with the season. And I mean, these guys, it's tough to sit out for an entire year and then come back and be, at your top level of playing. So it's, you got to do whatever you can to stay ready, I guess.
Right. And it seems like a lot of the guys were doing that. I talked to a couple minor leaguers a few weeks ago. It seems like everyone's ready to go. Everyone's just been practicing. This season's going to be different, but it's definitely going to be interesting. On that topic, do you have any predictions for who's going to win in this shortened season? Do you have any team that you think has a legitimate chance in this season?
I think the obvious, obvious picks are, the teams who were in contention last year.
Right.
I think that with the shortened season, it's going to give some of the other teams probably a better chance than they would have had over a normal 162-game season, because you get hot, you get off to a great start, and then, you can maybe ride that out through a 60-game season, where over 162-game season, it's going to be tough to pull everybody.
Right. So you're saying that that some players – well, that all the guys will be able to, remain hot for a longer amount of time because the season's shorter, they're not as tired, and it'll ultimately give a chance for an underdog team to maybe have a shot at winning the World Series this year?
Yeah, I mean, I would think. I mean, this, it seems like it's a perfect scenario for a team that nobody expects to be a contender, to come out hot and get off to a great start and maybe ride that out through, basically a two-month season.
Absolutely. I definitely agree with you on that one. And we learned that in this coming season, there's going to be a universal designated hitter on both sides in the American League and the National League. What's your opinion on the universal designated hitter? Are you for it in the future, or do you not like that idea?
No, I don't really like it. I mean, I'm not going to sit here and tell you I like watching pitchers go up there and bat under 100 and have terrible at bat. But to me, the guys who are the good hitting pitchers, that's a huge advantage for that team the days those guys are pitching. And so obviously those pitchers have worked at being, good hitters. So you got Greinke and Bumgarner and Kershaw, and some of these guys can really swing it. And it's almost like there's an extra bat in the lineup the days they're pitching. So I kind of I like the difference between the National League and American League.
Right, yeah, it makes baseball unique. And it's a strategic thing, as you mentioned. If you have a guy who can hit the baseball as a pitcher, and that guy gets taken away from you, and the other team that you would be playing against has a guy who can't really hit, then you have an advantage in that day. Your pitcher's hitting is better than their pitcher's hitting. If you make it the DH, then that advantage kind of goes away, because everyone's going to be able to pull a guy off their bench and have him as the designated hitter. Another question about strategy. In extra innings, there's talk about the runner being at second base to start off the extra innings. Are you a fan of that?
No, not at all.
Not at all?
Not at all. No, I just think that that's what they do in select baseball to speed up the game because there's a time limit. You know, we don't
right
time limit major league games, and you know, some of the funnest games I ever played in my career were games that went extra innings. You know, and it's just the pressure's on every inning. One play could be the determining factor in who wins this game, and I just think it's been played that way for, you know, however long baseball's been played. So I don't really see a reason to try and speed it up.
Right, yeah, there's the baseball is good the way it is. I feel you on that one, definitely. And moving into another controversial topic about the game of baseball, we're talking bat flips. We all saw the situation with Tim Anderson, how he aggressively threw his bat after hitting that long home run. I forget who it was off. And there was a lot of controversy after that. Should that be allowed? Should that be encouraged by the league? Or should the pitchers really be going after these guys? And should they like try and minimize the amount of bat flipping that's going on? What's your take on bat flips?
I'm from the old school. I don't agree with celebrating something that you're getting paid to do that excessively and showing, you know, basically what a bat flip does, in my opinion, is it shows up the pitcher that you just hit a home run off of. And, you know, there used to be a lot more respect in the game for that type of stuff. And we used to be able to police that type of stuff ourselves. And you know what? It went away. It was handled and it went away. And now I think with you know, all the warnings that are given out to teams, a lot of times even before the game starts, it kind of takes away from allowing the players to police that themselves. Because I mean, if you do that to somebody, if you do that to Max Scherzer or Justin Verlander or some of these, you know, Kershaw, most likely there's going to be some retaliation.
Oh, yeah.
Think about doing that next time.
Right, and that's kind of what kept it in check. Now guys aren't so much so doing that because they feel like it's a part of the game. And yeah, it's interesting how that turned out. If you look at Korean baseball right now, you see like exuberant bat flipping on a frequent basis. It's a very different culture. Some prefer the old school type of game and some prefer the new things. But there is one thing that everyone can agree on right now is that there is a little bit of fan losing in baseball, meaning baseball is losing fans at a higher rate than most other pro sports leagues in the United States. What do you think could be done about that? What do you think we can do to bring in the next generation of baseball fans?
Yeah, I just think we need to promote our game more. You know, I watch TV a lot. I watch, you know, a lot of the Sports Center and Baseball Network and a lot of the, you know, the sports channels, and you just don't see many baseball players on TV. You see a lot of football, a lot of mostly basketball, I think, and a lot of other sports, soccer and tennis and golf. And I think we just need to promote our players better and maybe, you know, get them where kids can identify with them more. And you know, the more they're out there, the more visible they are, the more people are going to identify with them and, you know, want to follow them and watch baseball.
Right. And do you think the league is moving in the right direction in regards to that? We've seen a little bit of promotion coming out recently. Obviously, huge things with Aaron Judge, people trying to get Mike Trout on billboards and things like that. Do you think the MLB is moving in a direction towards this, towards more promotion, which will make the game more popular amongst the younger generation?
Yeah, I think they are. But it's tough. I mean, they're coming from you know, way back in the bleachers,
right? Like, they're fighting an upstream battle.
We waited too long to get here, and we see, I mean, how many you know, commercials are there with Steph Curry and, you know, LeBron James, and then, you know, football commercials. And we just need to see more baseball players on TV, because baseball players are, you know, they're just normal guys, and people should identify with them.
Right, and yeah, obviously, I've been talking to a lot of baseball players recently. Baseball players are really cool, and I really think the MLB needs to do a consistently good job at bringing the game to the younger generation for the longevity of the game. And that just about concludes this episode of the World of Baseball podcast. Jeff, thank you so much for coming on. I really appreciate it.
You're welcome. Sorry about my technical inadequacies.
No worries. We got this done. We are recording. This is good. The recording is still going. So for those of you fans who would like to listen to the web exclusive mailbag episode, it can be found only on the website. So go check that out. You can support the podcast for only 99 cents a month. Thank you guys so much for listening. This is Bensy Gisser signing out. If you like what you're hearing from the World of Baseball podcast, please consider supporting. The link is in the podcast description. Thank you so much and have a good day.